A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Thanks to everyone who supports independent tech news directly. If you're already a DTS member, thank you. And if you're not one, become one at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, November 27th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from not Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from the snowy hills of the Finnish countryside, I'm Patrick Beja.
And from a progressively colder L.A. County area, I'm the show's producer, Roger.
I don't know if you want to go toe-to-toe with Finland on cold right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I was going to react.
I
said
progressively colder. I didn't say it was colder than Finland.
Still, it hurts my sensibilities.
That's just a frostbite talk.
We are going to talk today quite a bit about a ruling by the French regulatory agency under the GDPR that could have, maybe not, but could have sincere implications for the ad tech business. We're going to walk you through all that, but let's start with a few other tech things you should know.
YouTube stopped allowing annotations in videos made after March 2017, and now it's getting rid of existing ones too. Annotations will no longer be shown on any video starting January 15th.
Wonder what all the implications are there. Google product leaders told Reuters that Gmail's Smart Compose feature will not suggest he or she to prevent predicting sex or gender identity incorrectly. Gmail has 1.5 billion users, and Smart Compose assists on 11% of messages sent worldwide. The policy affects fewer than 1% of cases.
And Google also posted to its blog that the Pixel Slate will be available at retail Thursday, November 29th. People who pre-ordered have started receiving their shipping notifications, so congratulations to you. The Pixel Slate costs from between $599 on up to $1,599, depending on the configuration. Your keyboard costs you an additional $199, and the pen is $99. But let's talk a little bit more about an intriguing patent.
Indeed, Techtastic, the very well-named Techtastic, noted a patent filed in South Korea by Sony Interactive Entertainment shows the design of a new electronic game cartridge. The Verge points out that in May, Sony's PlayStation chief John Codera said he saw portable gaming as one method to deliver more gaming experiences.
I mean, that doesn't mean they bring back the Vita, does it?
Well, I mean, so the reason why this makes people think of portable gaming consoles is that, of course, home consoles now use disc media. So a cartridge could be used for a portable device. This is interesting. It's not 100% unexpected. I think this is kind of a corollary to a warning I've been bandying about for a while, which is do not trust tech journalists to make accurate predictions about gaming, the gaming industry, because not similar, but they're cousins, but they're very different industries. And when a lot of people were saying mobile gaming devices, dedicated mobile gaming devices are going away, because we see mobile phones, I think a lot of people, or at the very least, I'm going to speak for myself, me, said there is a space for a portable device that is dedicated because they provide the kind of experiences that gamers want. And so, of course, the Nintendo Switch is kind of half filling that role, but it doesn't mean that there wouldn't be a space for another competitor. And maybe Sony is thinking about, at least, at the very least, prototyping stuff. Now, of course, it's just a patent, and they probably file millions of patents every year. So, billions.
But my head first went to the Nintendo Switch, like, ooh, a Sony Switch type competitor. That could be interesting. But really, where my head ended was, why game cartridges? Like, even if you have a portable game console, do you need a cartridge? That seems vestigial.
Yes, a little bit. But remember, there are still people and parts of the world where the internet connection isn't good enough.
Sure.
And just for habits, if you're going to release, essentially, if you're going to release a portable device today, I don't think it's an automatic certainty that you're not going to include physical media. We're not there yet.
It's just not very portable to have to carry a cartridge around. I'm not saying you'll always have a connection, but you know, if you just have internal storage, that ought to be enough these days.
I think it addresses more the frustration or the outrage that people would display if it wasn't possible to purchase physical media, than to actually address a real issue. Maybe people would want it and then not use it as much as they thought they would. But still, it's, you know, physical media, a lot of gamers are still very attached to it.
Just in time for the holidays, Huawei posted a teaser on Weibo for a phone with a circular camera cutout placed at the top left corner of the screen. A notch replacement, perhaps. A leaked image of a screen protector for a Samsung phone showed a similar circular camera cutout in the screen, and Samsung confirmed it is working on this to The Verge.
Yeah, so obviously you can't do multiple cameras. You can't do the 16 cameras that LG wants to do or anything like that. So this would be your mid-range phones. But it is an elegant way to get a full screen into a mid-range phone by just placing that camera, you know, over in the corner of the screen.
Does that mean, do you think, there is literally no screen at that specific location?
Yeah. So like a notch.
All of your apps would just show... Well, nothing at that spot, or would need to be designed around it.
Right.
But.
That is a question of whether that part of the screen is then used, or does it just get in the way? You know, if you're playing a game or using an app that has important information up in that corner, how's that handled? I'm curious about that too.
Yeah, it seems it would be a case by case basis on how it would affect the usability of each app or function of the phone.
My guess is for Android, it might just not use that screen unless the app particularly told the phone it was designed for that. You know what I mean?
Right. It just essentially doesn't display what it's supposed to display there, which, as you mentioned, in some apps might be problematic.
Well, I was thinking if the app doesn't tell the Huawei phone or the Samsung phone I'm designed for this screen, it would have the top of the app stop below the cutout.
Oh, I don't think so. That would negate, because very few apps are going to be.
No, and that would, but I mean, that would be the only way to handle it. And then when you're full screen on the phone itself or any of the native apps, they would handle it and it would be fine.
It would seem like essentially you would have that cutout in your screen and then no app would make use of the bezel-less screen that is so gorgeous, except for the native ones.
Yeah.
What if they have an option to somehow access that thing by a special gesture that makes you move the screen for a little while and then you move it back to access that part.
That sounds very Samsung-y. Yeah, and Huawei could do that too, for sure. The South China Morning Post Abacus News blog posted that in the city of Ningbo, south of Shanghai, Dong Mingzhu, president of China's top air conditioning company, was shown on a public screen shaming people caught jaywalking on camera. This is a thing that a lot of cities do in China. They'll show people who are caught on camera with facial recognition as jaywalking and saying, hey, this person broke the law. It's a way to try to deter people from breaking the law. A line of text stated that she had crossed during a red light. However, the photographic evidence also shown on the screen next to this declaration was of a bus with an ad featuring Dong's face on it. She was never at the intersection. It was a mistake of facial recognition, seeing her picture on the bus and then assuming she was out in the intersection Because of that, police admitted on Weibo that it was a failure of the facial recognition system and say they have now fixed it with an upgrade.
Oh, they fixed it. It's okay. It's fine then. Everything, nothing to see here. Everything's working as intended.
I mean,
I'm joking, but obviously.
I love the picture of the screen. They're like, people have captured it and posted on Weibo that, you know, that picture of the person's face or her, you know, the executive's face clipped out of the photo. So it's actually just her, the photo of her on the bus with the text saying she crossed against the red light. And then a larger picture that's just of the bus. That's would normally be showing the person caught in the act, but instead all you see is like there's a bus with an ad on the side of it.
I mean, the story is, you know, you kind of have to chuckle at it, but think about, you know, the implications is, you know, the larger implication is facial recognition is going to produce some false positives here. So jaywalking, not the end of the world. Stay safe out there, everyone. But if it was something like your face was seen at the crime scene, you know, that kind of thing.
I mean, obviously, in a situation like that, a close investigation would have police realize very quickly that was just a bus, right? So hopefully that wouldn't lead to false accusations. But hey, it does show that facial recognition is not as solid as maybe we fear or in some cases authorities would like.
Right. I think in this case, it's just jaywalking. So it's not that huge a deal. And that person happens to be somewhat famous. So maybe the second look was, you know, happened where it might not have happened in other cases. And she was still shamed with that result when the result seems just look at the picture and you see that her face is on the bus. So they didn't, even in this case, didn't really look at it before they applied the sanction. So, you know, in other cases, it might be more problematic than just a shaming.
How many people who aren't Dong Mingzhu have been publicly shamed incorrectly? Probably because, they don't have their faces on buses, I guess. I don't
know. Right. They don't. But, you know, it just shows these kinds of things can happen. And again, in this case, it's just being shamed for jaywalking. Who knows what it can be used for other than shaming for jaywalking.
Yeah.
All right. Line will partner with Mizuho Financial Group to create a bank to provide financial services to close to 80 million users of Line's messaging app users. Line will own 51% of the bank. Mizuho will own 49%. Line also announced retailers who accept Line Pay services will be able to process payments from Tencent's WeChat starting early next year, taking advantage of rising Chinese tourism in Japan.
Yeah, this is a big acquisition, and I was a little surprised to see that it wasn't getting more pickup in the U.S. press, but Line... If for one thing is a huge company in Japan on the tech scene that is looking for a way to continue making money as it plateaus on its messaging app system, and getting into creating a bank seems like a really good way to do that. And also striking a deal with Tencent to say, hey, all those Chinese tourists with WeChat, we'll process those. We'll take a cut of that. Also seems like a really smart move as well.
You know, we were just talking the other day about the idea of, you know, if Google is sort of our new bank or Apple Pay and all of these types of services. Yeah, I mean, Line partnering to create a new bank that will work within the app. Is that something that freaks anybody out, or is this just the evolution of the new financial world we live in?
It seems like a step for sure, actually creating a bank. And especially given the ownership of the new entity, Mizuho, if I'm not mistaken, is not a small bank. It's not a thing that they found, you know, that's a small local outlet and they have the technical know-how, so they would partner with them. It's a large, at least national entity. Again,
1.79 trillion yen in revenue in 2018. So not bad. 30,000 employees.
And still, Line is going to own 51% of the bank. And it's an app that didn't exist 10 years ago. So in that balance of power, it's really interesting to note that Line is dominant, not the huge bank.
Well, and also as apps come and go and fall out of favor for a variety of reasons, what if and when Line starts to lose users, what happens to the bank? What does that look like down the road?
Well, I mean, that could be a blessing and a curse, right? Rightly so. Like if this bank is not Mizuho, it's set up by Mizuho, it's going to be operated by Mizuho, but potentially it could be used for other things. Maybe Line just becomes a bank in the future as the messaging app declined in that scenario.
I think also people might not realize Line is huge in Japan. Mm-hmm. It's essentially Facebook or WhatsApp. It's kind of indispensable. And it might be that once you have your A bank account there, you can have multiple bank accounts in different banks, but it might be that you can't get rid of Line. You're like, well, it's my bank.
It's my bank.
So
yeah.
To keep
it. That's a good way to make sure that your app stays really popular.
Exactly.
It's my bank. Got to use it. Amazon Web Services Vice President of Infrastructure Peter DeSantis introduced the AWS Graviton processor on Monday. Instances using the Graviton will be called EC2A1 and can run apps written for Linux, Red Hat, and Ubuntu. The ARM-based processor will be offered alongside instances using Intel and AMD processors.
Particularly Amazon Linux, Amazon's own distro of Linux on its own processor now running in the cloud. I mean, is this like when you buy the Amazon house brand of shirt or cable, now there's an Amazon house brand of processor running your cloud instance?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what this
Amazon
is.
Amazon Basics for your processor. This is the beauty of an ARM processor, right? Is that it's an open design. You do have to license it, but it's not prohibitively expensive, especially for a company like Amazon. It's not easy to design a chip. But I think it does say something that Google has done this as well. Apple obviously designing its own chip. More and more companies are deciding to design their own chips. Amazon acquired a company that does this sort of thing for this very reason.
It's interesting because it means they have more independence on the hardware side as well for their server business.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another step in the entrenchment of these companies that own everything they do.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest concern in the world because it's kind of a little bit opaque. You know, it's not very for consumer facing, but still AWS is, as we keep repeating every couple of weeks, gigantic. And now they don't need anyone to keep running, kind of. I'm exaggerating.
Look, I put on my Amazon Basics shirt and jeans. I sit down at the desk I bought on Amazon. I push some code from Amazon Linux up to the Amazon Graviton-powered cloud instance while I eat some Whole Foods for lunch. What's the problem, Patrick?
Exactly, exactly.
Don't forget your Amazon microwave,
which I heated in my Amazon smart microwave.
None of these things are inherently worrisome, but when you put them all together, it's kind of starting to look like, I don't know, something worrisome.
Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day, don't forget we have a show called Daily Tech Headlines that does it for you in 5 minutes, helps you keep up at dailytechheadlines.com. All right. We're going to talk about a ruling from the French data regulator. I call him CNIL. There's lots of
CNIL.
Ways. Say what?
CNIL.
CNIL? Schmazel. Yeah. Hoff and Steph Incorporated. I'm going to describe how real-time ads work to help you understand CNIL's actual ruling, and then we're going to discuss what the implications of this would be. So pay attention and hang in there. This is important to understand this issue, though, because it could have huge implications for you as an end user as far as how you're advertised to you and what services can be provided on an ad-supported basis. So Vectory is the company who's affected directly by this ruling. Vectory is what's called a demand-side platform, DSP for short. Basically, demand side means they service advertisers. Advertisers have a demand to place an ad. Vectory helps them out. Now, the following process I'm going to describe takes less than 100 milliseconds. All right. This is automatic. So an advertiser makes a bid. They probably even put in parameters to make the bids automatically. Let's say one of the bids is they want an ad to reach a 23-year-old female who recently shopped for a jigsaw, but also has shown that they like the show Game of Thrones. All right. That you can target in those kinds of ways.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
A DSP like Vectory handles this by taking that bid and doing it with an SSP, a supply side platform, which places ads with publishers. Vectory says it deletes 70% of the data it receives as part of this process, right? Because the SSP has to say, like, hey, we have this many people who fit that description. Here they are. They get that data. They say, we get rid of most of that. But Keneal found it had data on 67.6 million users derived from 32,708 mobile apps. Now, a lot of this programmatic advertising and the reason for SSPs and DSPs is because we don't have rich cookies that you can set like you do on a desktop browser on mobile, especially for apps. So you need these ad targeting companies that say, we collect all this data together to help you target because we know you can't just set a cookie and use that. Vectory, like others in this chain, ad exchanges, SSPs, etc., often rely on the publishers, like the apps, to get consent for them. And that's important for the GDPR. The GDPR requires consent before you can collect and use this data. So Keneal ruled that when apps asked users for consent to gather the data to make all this work, they did not follow GDPR requirements for informed, free, specific, and unambiguous consent. Informed because Vectory didn't, according to Keneal, tell everyone exactly what partners would receive the data on the first page. You could click I accept without ever seeing that. Users had to choose to refine their preferences, then scroll down, then click a link to see the partners. And Keneal said, no, that doesn't qualify as informed. It wasn't free because Vectory pre-ticked the boxes, which is against GDPR recital 32. It wasn't specific because Vectory used some non-standard language on the consent screen, and Keneal found it imprecise. And here's the big one. It was ambiguous. Article 7 of GDPR requires that any company like Vectory show a chain of consent for each user by purpose, that the user said, yes, it is okay to use my data for that purpose. Vectory thought they'd satisfied this because they had contracts with these supply side platforms, with these apps, to get consent from the people. And they said, look, we got a contract right here. It says they will make sure that they get consent for the purpose. And Keneal said, look, the mere presence of a contractual clause is not enough. Vectory must validate that expressed consent. They can't just point to the contract. What if it's not being enforced? You've got to audit that. You've got to do your due diligence. Now, why this could be a precedent is that the International Advertising Bureau relies on a constant flow by contract to make this long, complicated ad process work. And by the way, I simplified it just now. If you thought it was complicated the way I described it, it's much more complicated than that in reality. And if the contract part of this is not valid, that entire programmatic ad system would have to change significantly. That may not be the problem. IAB Europe's CEO Townsend Feehan told TechCrunch that he doesn't think Vectory implemented it correctly. He's like, look, we've got a framework. They probably didn't implement it right. And back in September, Armand Heslot, a privacy and security expert at CNIL, said on a panel in Cologne that the IAB framework is not perfect, but it's going in the right direction. So it's not like they've said, yeah, this is not okay in the past. But what if it isn't? We have some folks out there. Johnny Ryan of the browser Brave is among people who've been filing complaints saying these chain of consent contracts are not sufficient. And they've been filing complaints all over. They're very pleased about this decision. They're going to use it in future complaints. And if they are able to get it thrown out, real-time bids with that kind of highly specific targeting would not be possible anymore. You could still do real-time bids, but you'd be limited to targeting your general region. Like, well, that person's in the LA area. We can target them based on that. Or that person's in the Helsinki area. We can target them based on that. But we wouldn't have the more specific information. This is how DuckDuckGo does it. DuckDuckGo is a privacy-based search engine. It does ads, but it does them based on what they call real-time interest. So if somebody searches for Game of Thrones, okay, a Game of Thrones ad might be surfaced, but they don't know who the person is searching for Game of Thrones. They just go based on what's being searched at the time. Johnny Ryan, I mentioned him, of the private web browser Brave, believes this could end up eliminating clickbait, since it would be hard to buy an audience cheaper somewhere else, like you can right now, and prices would rise for the good publishers. And it would possibly reduce the dominance of Google and Facebook. So.
And that's all the time we have. Thank you very much.
We've got a couple more minutes. I know that's a lot to explain. But in the end, you can see where we've got this very complicated ad system. We've got this ruling that says, hey, the whole thing that this whole ad system is predicated on might not be valid.
Yeah.
So forgive the very obvious question here, but we're talking about whether or not this is a precedent and what it'll mean going forward. Who decides that? What, you know, who has to make a stink to actually change anything if this indeed is a precedent?
The next regulatory agency that rules on one of these complaints from Johnny Ryan and friends is the next piece in that. There's not going to be one supreme person who puts it in place. I think I'm right about that, Patrick.
I wonder if, you know, Vectory could change the way they do it and conform to the IAB's framework and then go back to the CNIL and say, all right, you know, we fixed it. What do you think now? And maybe they could say, this works. This is better. You know, if I'm going to put on my pro-privacy European hat for a second. And I think a lot of your audience probably heard all of this and thought, oh my God, those Europeans are crazy. They're impeding, you know, the march of progress. And of course, you're going to have issues like this because you shouldn't have the government meddle in what is a technical issue. But if you agree that private information, it should be protected, which Europe did with, you know, different things, including GDPR. And I would add, I think a lot of the world also agrees on principle. You know, if you agree that private data should be protected and should be not be given without consent, this is the kind of thing, this is the kind of issue you have to get into and you have to arbitrate on. So, yes, it is complicated. Yes, it seems kind of overly technical. But the important question isn't whether or not, I forgot their name already.
Vectory.
Yes, thank you. Sorry. So, Vectory did or didn't comply with the GDPR. I think the more important question is, should you worry about your private data at all? Because again, I think if you do, then these kinds of questions are inevitable as we sort out what we can't and can't do with that type of data, because the system is like this, super complicated.
Yeah, I think what my guess is going to happen is Keneal or another agency will have another decision and be able to show it wasn't that they relied on a contract. It's that they didn't do enough to make sure they were using their contract as a shield for bad practices. And that's why we busted them. And if you're relying on a contract and you've done due diligence and they're reliable contracts and you can show that, it won't be a problem.
And I also think if I understand this correctly, which I might not, I also think if they let this slide, it could then open the door for other types of companies to, again, decide that they're going to work this through a contract and then say, well, we had the contract, we didn't know what was happening, and elicit more or worse type of behavior. So it's important maybe, possibly, to say, no, sorry, this kind of construction, legal construction for your responsibility in this can't be validated in the GDPR framework.
Well, I don't think this is the last we've heard of this story, but you know what you can do with stories about this in the future is submit them to our subreddit. Thanks to everybody who does that. Submit stories and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You can also head on over to our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
Let's see what's in the mailbag.
Oh, it came all the way from Cape Town. Yay. Thinus wrote in and said, your story on the Wi-Fi speeds being below mobile networks makes complete sense for South Africa. Broadband penetration is very low and also very costly. Most of it is still ADSL, with fiber being rolling out slowly. 4G coverage, on the other hand, is far better. Hmm. Our biggest networks, Vodacom and MTN, achieved 85% and a higher population coverage, and they also signed roaming agreements with the smaller two networks to boost their coverage. The report makes sense to me. Data, however, remains very expensive on mobile, limiting the benefits of these speeds for the bulk of the population.
Ah, love getting feet on the ground reports like that. Thank you so much.
Hey, in Finland, a lot of people have unlimited data plans on mobile and use that only. So it's not as fast as Wired, but a lot of people use that and they're very happy with it.
Well, thanks also to Patrick Beja for being with us this wonderful Tuesday. Patrick, what has been going on since we saw you last?
Lots of things as always, but one thing I would recommend people go check out is MVGB, the monthly video game briefing. You can get a quick briefing about the video game industry and the news that matters to people who are not super hardcore gamers, but more casual or want to know what's happening for their children or their coworkers and things like that. And it's an offshoot of DTNS, as you might have guessed by the name. My co-host is Scott Johnson on that show. It's just once a month, so easy to get into. And it's available at dailytechnewsshow.com/MVGB, right?
Absolutely. Yep, that's right.
Yep.
Go there check it out, folks. Also, right now we're trying to get to our monthly goal of one more patron than last month. We've picked up two patrons since yesterday, and you could be the next two if you're two people. And if you become a patron or even stay a patron between now and December 5th, we'll make it worth your while, or at least we'll show our appreciation. How about that? By sending you a holiday postcard with a special message from the DTNS team. Remember, you have to give us your mailing address when you sign up on Patreon, or if you're already a patron, go in and add your mailing address. If you want to get the card, you don't have to put in the mailing address if you don't want to, but we can't get it to you if we don't know where you are. So do that right now. Sign up at patreon.com/DTNS.
Do you send overseas?
We love getting your...
US? Yes.
Overseas. Excellent.
Anywhere in the world, even South Africa. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow to talk about the devices folks need when they're in the military with Anthony Lemos. Talk to you then.
Bye.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.